Hey, Geek History Lesson listeners, Jason Inman here. We have another bonus episode for you this week because everybody is going crazy with fun and love for the new Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi series and for all the rad things that were announced a couple weeks ago at Star Wars Celebration. We thought we would share with you an episode that we did on our Patreon about Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. A little retrospective of us looking back at that movie in our thoughts. It's one of our extra podcasts that we do over at patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. Now, before we get to the episode, I just want to remind you that in case you live near or around the Los Angeles area, Ashley Victoria Robinson, the co-host of this podcast, is acting and producing in a new play called The Bearer of Bad News. And there will be a performance on June 12th and June 25th as part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival. So if you'd like to see the guest professor of Geek History Lesson live in person and acting to her fullest talents, go see The Bearer of Bad News as part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival. Now, enough with the promotion and the pats in the back. You guys are here for The Phantom Menace. Let's listen to this episode. Hello and welcome to Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures. I am Darth Jason.
And I am, I don't know, Ashley.
Why aren't you Darth Jason? I mean, Ashley, not Darth Jason. Do you want to be Darth Jason?
Only if I could be Darth Jason Skywalker.
Welcome to the podcast where we don't know how to start things at all. But I will tell you this. We have decided to do something a little special on this, Jason and Ashley.
Yeah.
You know, it's the 20th anniversary, Ashley, of a movie that not many people saw. Not a lot of people saw this movie.
Uh-huh. A little independent feature.
Yeah. It was called Episode One, The Phantom Menace. And it's a little weird that it's called that because I don't know if there was ever an Episode Two. As far as I know, I didn't see it. I have no idea. So
because it is in actuality Episode Four.
Yes. This movie came out of nowhere, swung for the fences, had a racist alien in it, and everybody said, no, go away. Let's talk about Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, Ashley.
And then they made two more.
And our experiences, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see them.
The second one's all about sand. It's not
wow.
Very good.
You where did they continue the Phantom Menace universe to?
They continued it to the planet of Naboo.
I was waiting for you to say, I was setting you up for mediocrity. I was hoping you were going to go for that.
I was trying really hard. I've only seen the Clone Wars Attack of the Clones. That's what I meant.
Yeah, I was like, Clone Wars Attack of the Clones. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember most of that movie.
All right, so it's funny. So this was your idea, and we got to say, patrons out there, that we actually kind of would have done this as a regular episode of Geek History Lesson if we had remembered the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, something that we're thinking about doing more is trying to put out special episodes that tie into anniversaries of things if we haven't already covered that ground. For example, this year is Ghostbusters 35th anniversary, but we already did a Ghostbusters episode.
Oh yeah, I don't know where we'd go with that
one. So I don't really know what else we would do with that. However, for this, we can talk about The Phantom Menace.
We can talk about The Phantom Menace. Now, Ashley, I want to ask you, because you were a young little chitlin.
Yes.
When The Phantom Menace came out.
I was under 10 years old.
1999.
Yep.
When did you first see The Phantom Menace? Now, did you go see it in the theaters? Did you see it on VHS? How did you first see it?
My father took me to the cinema to see it.
Oh, that's a good dad.
He had shown us the remastered VHSs.
The special editions.
Yeah, not too long. Maybe 96? Not too long before.
Can I interrupt your story just very briefly?
Sure.
I have a story that specifically relates to that.
Okay.
So I had, right before they made the special editions, before they released them in theaters, which they did, and I didn't get to see any of them in theaters, they re-released on VHS the original versions of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And they all had like little cutouts, like one of them was Darth Vader, one of them was Yoda, and one of them was, it was like half of their face. I had the regular versions of Star Wars and Return of the Jedi. Now, why I didn't buy them as a box set, I have no idea, because I was buying them. And I had the special edition of Empire.
Oh, wow.
That was my VHS Star Wars trilogy. Okay, so
You had seen the special editions
of the regular trilogy.
Of the regular ones.
Yeah,
okay, cool.
I like those a lot.
Because Luke Skywalker is your favorite Star Wars character, just for everybody to know.
Yeah, yes. He is to this day. I like Leia a lot, too. I also love Ahsoka Tano. But
well, by liking Luke, you half like Leia because they are twins.
Luke is my all-time Star Wars crush. Such a babe.
Such a babe. Do you think Mark Hamill's a babe?
Totally.
Is he still good looking now?
Yes.
He actually is a good looking
dude. I think Mark Hamill has aged very well. I would kiss his face.
He's very short.
Well, that's fine. So am I.
All right. Maybe you'll see eye to eye.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay, so your dad took you to see...
He took us to see it in the movie theater.
The Phantom Menace.
Before we saw The Phantom Menace, we got this book that was like a visual companion to it.
The visual dictionary, I think.
So I was already in love with Queen Amidala in that classic... white and red and black, possibly problematic when you consider the origins of white face paint aesthetics. So I loved that character and I was really interested in the movie. And I remember loving it because I was less than 10 years old.
Yes.
And I remember the next day we were driving around and on the news there was a movie review of it and it was bad. And they said that this movie, I will remember this until I die. The quote was, "This movie is an insult to the Star Wars universe and presumes their audience is full of 12-year-olds.
Wow.
And I remember saying to my dad, I was like, but I liked that movie. Mm-hmm. And my dad said, yeah, but how old are you?
Now, can you remember what your dad thought of The Phantom Menace?
I remember asking him what he thought. And he said, what did you think? And I said, I loved it. And he said, I'm glad you liked it.
Ah, the classic parent. Oh, so he didn't enjoy it.
And I literally never asked him again.
He didn't enjoy
what he thought about it. And he has since passed on. So I cannot. No, I don't think he liked it. But he took me, and he didn't ruin it for me. He was a pretty good sport about it. Yeah. I remember really, really liking it. And then I remember watching it again right before Attack of the Clones and being like, oh, this is bad.
Yes.
Like, and it was one of the first...
Because you would have been like 13 by that point?
Yeah, I don't remember.
14, 12?
When did Attack of the Clones?
Attack of the Clones came out in 2002. So it's 99, 2002, 2005.
Yeah, I would have been 12, which was kind of when for me,
you can now figure out Ashley's age.
Oh, well, I've said it many times.
Yep.
That was around the time where I started to develop like a taste in movies and like...
That's where everybody does,
you know,
I think.
Because when you're a kid, you just sort of like everything unless it scares you.
Sure.
And I remember being very disappointed that it was bad. I also remember right before Attack of the Clones, Vogue started publishing their Teen Vogue imprint, and Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman had just been cast, and they were the first cover.
Oh, wow.
And I asked my mom to buy it for me.
Your mom was like, why?
Well, Natalie Portman had obviously already been cast because she was in Phantom Menace. But it was a big deal because Hayden Christensen was Canadian and we were Canadian and I wanted to read their interview.
Oh, do you remember? Was it a good interview?
I don't remember, but I remember.
If anyone has a copy of that Teen Vogue, please send it to the P.O. box.
Yeah, please. But I can remember the cover and I cut out the cover and I put it on my wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a year that we had moved. So I got to decorate my room again for the first time. But that's like one of my happiest memories of the prequel trilogy.
Before you saw the movie,
yeah.
Did you like teenager Anakin? Just the look of him? And as a big Luke fan, were you like, oh, I can buy that's
yeah,
Luke's dad?
Yeah, I thought he was cute.
I think he does look like Mark Hamill.
He looks like Luke, especially when he grew his hair out for the third one.
Yes.
But he's very bad.
Yes, he is. So. Yes, he is. But we're not talking about him.
We're not talking about
Phantom Menace.
We're talking about... Who's the other Anakin?
Wait, I didn't even know. Wait.
Who's the other Anakin who's like in jail now?
Jake Lloyd.
There you go.
As far as I know, there are no other Anakins. I didn't know they made sequels to this movie.
That's right. here's one more fun fact about Jake Lloyd. I loved the books, The Babysitter's Club.
Okay. Where are we going with this?
A Babysitter's Club video game.
Alrighty.
And
then.
You like filled out your information when you played the game, and one of the things was like, who is your celebrity crush?
You said Jake
and
Lloyd?
I said Jake Lloyd.
Oh, my God.
And the other characters would, like, pass you notes that you could find in your locker. And one of them was like, I saw Jake Lloyd at the mall, and I thought of you. And I've always remembered that as well.
And now he's in jail.
Yep. You play Anakin Skywalker, and your life takes a real downward spiral, as it turns out. Except the guy who voices him in the TV show. He's doing pretty well for himself.
Yep.
So, Jason... Where did you first see The Phantom Menace?
I saw The Phantom Menace in theaters on opening day. And
like any good nerd.
I was a freshman in high school.
Now you can figure out Jason's age. Yep.
Well, if you know what year, because I actually, I'm one of the youngest people in my class. I went to elementary school early. Your math could be wrong. You could make me older than what I actually am. So I was a freshman in high school.
Uh-huh.
And I convinced, because the hype was huge.
Yeah.
Hype was so huge. I can remember a couple weeks before that when we knew the date that all the toys were going to be at like Walmarts and stuff like that.
And listeners to Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures know that you are a huge action figure collector.
I love action figures. Yeah, I still do. And that was at the height of Star Wars action figures. Like, Kenner had been making that 3¾ line for about 5 years now. They started right before, I think, the special editions went to movie theaters. And I had so many of those. They're such good figures. And I was, like, so excited for the Phantom Menace toys. And I remember I went there the first day that they were there. And I bought, I think, 5 different action figures. I bought Obi-Wan Kenobi and Pat without his clothes. So, you know, here's the thing, and I'm going to say this as a nerd. I like the Jedis when they have their brown cloaks.
Me too.
If you notice in the prequels a lot, they'll take them off to fight, which I was like, wait a minute. Old man Obi-Wan Kenobi fought with that brown cloak. Why can't you guys?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, the original initial action figures, the first wave of Phantom Menace toys, all had no cloaks, which really irritated me.
Mm-hmm.
But I got Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, Mace Windu, and Darth Maul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it later became that Darth Maul became very rare, and it was hard to find. Now you can just find them anywhere you want. But at the time, like when it first was released, the Darth Maul was the figure that they short shifted, so he became very valuable very quick. Now, I kept all of them in package, except for I kept two of them in package. I kept Mace and Darth Maul in package, and I opened up Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought, I was like, oh, hey, the first initial Star Wars toys in package, they'll be worth a lot. In fact, I still have them in package, although I know they're worth nothing.
You also collect Obi-Wans.
I collect Obi-Wan Kenobi action figures, and I have a whole bunch of them that are still in package, too. Again, if we ever become a rich man or have a bigger house, there will be an Obi-Wan Kenobi wall somewhere. So I was already on the Phantom Menace train. I'd heard no things, so I convinced my parents to let me skip school, on a Friday, so that me and my friends could drive over to Joplin, Missouri, which had the best theater. It had this. It was called Hollywood Theaters, but it was like the biggest and the best. It's kind of like what a nicer upscale AMC would be now.
Yeah.
Because where I grew up, it was this small little like 2 screens, very tiny.
Yep.
Maybe less than 100 seats in the thing, and we wanted to see Star Wars, so we went there. We saw it. I liked it. I remember I initially liked it. And it, fun fact, it wasn't until about a year and a half where I realized, like, oh, I don't like this movie that much.
Well, the hype from the pod racing game that came out around the same time, I think, also helped.
That pod racing game is so good.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah, go.
I loved Jar Jar Binks when I first saw the movie.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I loved him so much. I had his action figure. I had a clear, see-through yellow plastic purse. And I put my Jar Jar Binks action figure in it.
Nice.
Carried him around with like my little wallet. And I loved that. I wish I still had that toy, but I'm sure it's been thrown out in the intervening years because I got really sour on that character. But now I'm like nostalgic for how I felt as a little child.
Well, you know, it's funny. As a kid, there's nothing wrong with Jar Jar. And it's also interesting, too, because when you I've heard in episode 2 that they possibly have made that, you know, they moved. They reduce the amount of Jar Jar.
Mm-hmm.
They severely reduce the amount of Jar Jar. Whereas like Jar Jar's in almost every scene in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
It took me a while. Like I bought it on a VHS. I had the sound. In fact, fun fact, Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, was one of the very first CDs I ever owned.
Wow.
Because my grandmother, for my birthday, because Phantom Menace came out around my birthday, my grandmother took me to a Walmart and bought me a stereo. Mm-hmm. Bought me like it was like a little boombox actually at the time, but it was I didn't have a CD player before that. And my grandmother allowed me to pick out 2 CDs, and I picked Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. That music came out before the movie. Also, by the way, one of the tracks was called Qui-Gon's Funeral.
Do you know what the other CD you picked out
was? Yes, and I'm quite embarrassed by this, but I don't care.
Okay.
It was Creed's first solo album.
Oh, that's perfectly acceptable for the time. And
in 1999, they were a big thing.
I thought you were going to say Garth Brooks, honestly.
No, I wish it had been Garth Brooks, man, because I'd still listen to that CD. Garth Brooks is good, man. Whatever he's like, Garth Brooks is whatever. I've also, by the way, I've loaded a couch into Garth Brooks' pickup truck. It was one of my summer jobs at a furniture factory in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he was very nice, and he tipped us very well.
That's nice.
He was lovely.
That's very sweet.
He was such a lovely dude.
You can request the Geek History Lesson on Garth Brooks at GHL Podcast.
In my life, never been undone.
We'd have to have Jeremy on for that one.
Yeah, that's a fun fact. I know we talk. It's weird that Jason and Ashley's. We end up talking about my best friend Jeremy Skinner, who lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
We also recently talked about him on a GHL Extra.
Yes, we end up talking about him a lot. Yeah. But it's interesting. His father, Tom Skinner, who is actually go Google him. He is a world renowned musician. He is one of the most famous. They call them Red Dirt Rockers. Because Oklahoma's full of red dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And he started out, he was Garth Brooks' lead guitarist. They were best friends. It's very interesting. You can go find, I've shared it online, you can find clips of
them playing together.
Of them playing together. And they look it's so weird for me because, again, I knew Tom Skinner because he's no longer with us. But yes. He was so awesome. He's so nice. It's so weird to see him look like a baby. He looks so young. I'm like, oh, my God, who is that
guy?
You
knew him as a much older man.
Yeah, and Garth Brooks has a terrible mustache. But anyways, we're talking about The Phantom Menace. This is not the Garth Brooks cast.
Yes.
This is the Phantom cast.
The Phantom Menace. The Menace?
Menasticast.
Menasticast.
This is the Menasticast. Ashley, let's talk about this movie.
Okay, let's.
Okay.
When was the last time you saw this movie?
Oh, man. Before I met you.
Okay.
Seriously. Like,
so like 7 or 8 years ago?
At least.
Wow.
I'll tell you this. I moved to Los Angeles in 2010.
Yeah.
I don't think I've watched it
since then.
Since I've moved to LA.
I think I may have watched it. It's the kind of thing that people would put on at parties or whatever, just for fun. I feel like the last time I remember watching it was in 2004. I went on a school band trip to England and Scotland, and we were staying in this B&B in Scotland, and there were three channels on, and one of them was playing The Phantom Menace.
Just on repeat?
Yeah. And we were like, wow, this is bad.
Yeah.
I can see that.
That would be a fun movie just to put in the background of a party.
Yeah.
Just to see if anybody noticed it.
Yeah.
Oh, Misa Cha-Cha Beans.
And then people would yell at it, I'm sure.
Okay, so you and I have talked a lot about the more recent Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
The Disney Star Wars movies. The Disney era of Star Wars movies, as we will.
Yeah.
And I have brought this to your attention several times because you and I are not huge fans of the new Disney Star Wars movies.
No.
And I have this theory, and I've said this to you a lot. I don't know, I've said to certain people that I kind of think that George Lucas is the secret sauce of Star Wars, more so than people realize. And my argument for that is that the prequels, while being dramatically bad movies, have a lot of big ideas.
Yeah.
And they're very deep and they're very layered.
Well, that's the reason why Clone Wars works.
Yes. Well, Clone Wars was co-produced by George Lucas with Dave Filoni.
But it explores all of those big swing mythologies with better storytelling.
Well, and that's the thing is to me, the modern Disney movies are paper thin.
Yes.
Whereas the prequels, there's a lot of thought, even into something like Jar Jar. There's a lot of thought put into the Gungan city and Naboo and all that stuff like that.
I know we usually do this at the end of the podcast, but I am just about to finish up the Queen's Shadow, the Padme Amidala YA novel by E.K. Johnston. And so right now I know a lot about Naboo, and the idea of Naboo is a very interesting idea. The idea of that society.
Yes.
So...
Well, let's talk about this. Let's do it just a little bit in sections here. Let's talk about the biggest, baddest thing and probably the coolest thing about The Phantom Menace is the Jedi.
Absolutely.
This is the first time ever that we got to see the Jedi at the height of their powers, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
Their lightsaber fight was blazingly fast. Like, that's one of the best parts of Phantom Menace, is that lightsaber fight.
Yeah.
Like, Darth Maul is one of the coolest things ever.
Well, absolutely.
Liam Neeson being a Jedi, pretty cool. Seeing the Jedi Council on Coruscant, pretty cool. Like, these were the Jedi. Like, what do you think about how the Phantom Menace portrays the Jedi compared to, like, what we saw in the original trilogy? Because, again, the most we get from the original trilogy are a hobo who lives in a jungle planet, and an old man who is a
hobo who lives in the desert.
A hobo who lives in the desert, who both become ghosts, and a farm boy who gets a lot of weird lessons from books.
Well, it's interesting because the Jedi in the prequels expand the mythos for good and for ill.
Midichlorians.
Because we're seeing the Jedi at their height, but not at their best.
No, it's the beginning of the end for the Jedi.
We're seeing how they are lost and buried in their traditions. And I remember even as a child watching it for the first time, when they bring Anakin before the council and they're like, no, he's too old.
Hate leads to fear. Fear leads to sumptuous suffering.
Do it. And I remember being like, but Luke, by comparison, is practically a grown-up.
He is. Well, I mean, he's supposed to be 16 in the first movie.
You know, but even as a child, I remember being like, well, this is foolish because it doesn't matter.
Yes.
And part of that, it's not even the midichlorians or, like, the absolutely stupid over-explaining that we get.
Yes.
Starting in this movie and then sort of throughout the trilogy, but by exposing this much of the Jedi to us, you know, whereas before we were sort of spoon-fed, now we're being hit over the head with the soup pot that is the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a lot of things revealed about them that demystify them, which is both interesting and I think a little sad. They're a little less the weird religious figures that the original trilogy made them out to be.
Well, they're
Han Solo jives against.
They're less the weird space wizards.
Yes.
That everybody's like, oh, a Jedi. Like in the original trilogy, people don't think the Jedi still exist. And then when they see one, they're all like, it's so interesting that just in 16 years, people are like, the Force doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, just 15 years earlier, like, I mean, in the first 15 minutes of The Phantom Menace, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan Kenobi open a giant can of whoop-ass on this Trade Federation ship and basically fight an entire army by themselves.
But 20 years, that's in a whole generation.
Sure, sure. But I mean, like, there would be lots of grown-ups that would have seen active Jedis.
Well, yeah, including Han Solo.
You know, it would be, I mean, again, like, that including Han Solo. Like, Han Solo would have been old enough to see Jedis,
yeah.
Yes.
The older I get, the more out of love I felt with that character for so many reasons.
Han Solo is kind of problematic. You know, that's a different podcast. So, yes. But, yeah, I don't know. What do you want to bring up about The Phantom Menace? Like, what about that movie stands out? Let's talk about this. What do you think is a major success? Because we always talk about the failures of Phantom Menace.
Yes.
What do you think is a major success of The Phantom Menace? What is something that The Phantom Menace does right?
The Phantom Menace, I actually think, does a really good job setting up the parallels between Anakin and Luke.
Ooh, okay.
Because you can debate all you want whether Luke or Anakin is the chosen one, the one to bring balance to the Force.
It's Luke.
We all know it's Luke. Grow up. But Luke, because of when that story was created, is your classic hero's journey. And they do the same thing with Anakin, but the problem is, because Anakin is going to have a sharper turn later on, they do it a little more extreme. Like, they're both from Tatooine. Okay, that's fine. Anakin comes from...
Anakin's a slave.
Is a slave, whereas Luke was just, like, a poor, but not unprivileged farm boy. Luke has friends. Luke goes to Tashi Station.
They both don't have dads.
They both don't have dads. They both have to work.
Yep.
They both don't have a lot of downtime with their friends. They're both good with droids.
They're both good mechanically. Yes.
You know, and a lot of that stuff is not necessarily...
They're also good pilots. Both good pilots.
Yep. They both love sassy brunettes. You know, there's a lot of stuff where...
That's true.
There's a lot of stuff that... is really obvious about the way that they're setting it up, but it's a lot of it is even in the storytelling. And even if I don't love Shmi and I don't love the storyline with his mom and how that all play, I appreciate that they really went out of their way to show you that even though Luke has it hard, Luke has it better, and because of that,
can I interject?
Is perhaps why he went the way he did
with two things here.
Please.
Your conversation reminded me. One major success of The Phantom Menace is that it had, I thought, the coolest fucking teaser poster I have seen.
Where he's
for a movie.
Walking with his head down and it's Vader shadow.
And the shadow is Vader. Yeah. That is so cool. And by the way, if you're not reading, there's two amazing series by Marvel Comics called Darth Vader. There's Darth Vader by Kieran Gillen.
I'll link to them in the show notes.
And there's Darth Vader by Charles Soule. In the Darth Vader by Charles Soule, he goes into a... It's all about him building his castle on Mustafar and like going into the dark energy. And he's doing that because he's trying to resurrect Padme as like the secret thing. Because it's set between episode 3 and episode 4. So the reason why he builds his castle is because he finds out that it's a hub of dark energy. Mm-hmm. And one of the times when he goes and does this force meditation or whatever, he sees himself as young Anakin. Mm-hmm. And when he turns around, it's that teaser poster. And
that's cool.
And the shadow is Vader, and the shadow of Vader reaches out towards him. It's funny, Charles Soule talked on Twitter a lot about how he's like, I was so blown away by that poster. He's like, I wanted to canonize it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's so great. The other thing is, I'm going to say one of the successful moments of Phantom Menace is when Anakin says goodbye to Shmi.
Yep, that's a good
is
moment.
Is one of the best. I'm gonna call right here. One of the best moments in all three prequels movies. When he, like, when is that wide shot between Qui-Gon and Shmi and their opposite sides, and he walks with Qui-Gon, and then he runs back to his mom. I think that, like, and the music, like, plays up, and then when he leaves, they give you the Force theme again.
It's also very much the opposite of Luke's relationship with Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, who are like, no, you can't.
Yes.
And Shmi, even though she's a slave, is willing to let him, to let Anakin go.
Well, and she says, she's like, she also says, in my heart of hearts, I know I will see you again.
Yeah.
Because I love that, like, it's, again, it's this little, for whatever you say about Jake Lloyd, like, and he does give a bad performance in that movie. That moment where he says, he was like, I don't know if I'm ever going to see you again. And as a 9-year-old to your mom, you're like, oh, that's a good, that, I want to go back to the major problems of Phantom Menace. Those are the major problems of Phantom Menace, because like it has those moments where you're like, oh, this is Star Wars. And then the rest of it isn't. Because another moment I'm going to give you that is so, to me, another success that is so quintessentially Star Wars. During the giant fight between Darth Maul and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, Obi-Wan gets knocked down 2 levels, right?
Yes.
And then Qui-Gon's like, you know, fighting Darth Maul, blah, blah, blah. And then they get stuck in the energy screens.
Mm-hmm.
And Darth Maul keeps like pacing and he's growling and he's hitting the thing. And then Qui-Gon turns off his lightsaber and meditates.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is so quintessentially Star Wars, that moment that this Jedi is just like, I'm good. Because as soon as the energy barrier drops, he like springs up and lights immediately, like without missing the beat.
Excuse me.
And that is a major success of that movie.
I also think that Padme is a pretty big success, but perhaps more so on paper.
Because you tell.
She's obviously the mirror for Leia, in the way that Anakin is the mirror for Luke. And Padme is such a cool idea. Like, she's young and she's gone into politics and she's good at it.
And she's supposed to be 14 in that movie.
Yes, she is. And for me, as a child watching it, the reveal of Sabe, her double,
Keira
played
Knightley.
By Keira Knightley, is really, really cool.
It's a nice little twist. And you can, if you watch the movie for a second time,
you can tell.
You can spot it because they look different enough.
But I'm also going to say, hot take, a movie would have been better if Keira Knightley played Padme.
I'm going to agree with you on that, actually. I like Natalie Portman as an actress in other movies.
Sure.
But I do think Keira Knightley's a better action movie actress.
Yeah, I just think Keira Knightley's generally better.
I just think Natalie Portman didn't understand the movie, or understand that the movie needed to be played broadly.
I mean, I'll say this about Natalie Portman. I don't think she's good in any of those movies.
She's also, by the way, quite young in that movie, too.
I know she is. Like, I don't think she has any chemistry with Hayden Christensen later on.
Wait, Hayden Christensen? Who are you talking about?
Well, he's this guy. It's very evident by the fact that she physically pushes away from him when they are supposed
to be
kissing.
Is he Boss Nass?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the fact that she has never reprised her role and never appeared at a Star Wars event, I think tells you how she feels.
Everything.
And how she felt about that franchise.
But, you know, it's interesting. She also did that with Marvel as well.
Yeah. Like I think she's difficult.
They booted her out of the Thor franchise.
Yeah.
They wrote her out of the universe. And I just, by the way, I learned this recently. The spoilers for Avengers Endgame, but the footage of Natalie Portman in that movie is from a deleted
scene. It's leftover footage. Yep. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. They apparently they called her in to do. They needed a piece of VO where you see her in the hallway.
Uh-huh.
And they had her re-record one line, and that's it.
Wow.
And then she got an invite to the premiere.
But anyway, I think Padme is a really interesting character, and I think that's the reason why in some of the other extended universe stuff, Padme is really dynamic, and she's become really fascinating.
She's great in the Clone Wars animated series.
In Clone Wars, yeah. She's awesome. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of Phantom Menace is interesting because it's like an objectively bad movie.
Yes, it is.
But when you break these things down, there are a lot of really interesting choices. There's a lot of really cool narrative moves. It just does not coalesce and come together. And also the effects look bad.
By
modern standards.
And that's what I said. Like the problem with it is that it is not a dramatic movie. It is not. It doesn't work as a film.
Yeah.
But when you break apart all the ideas, the ideas work. Like, the characters work. The locations work.
There's even some, generally speaking, decent casting going on.
The general storyline of the entire movie works.
Yeah.
The problem is specifically in each scene, is that when you go to each scene, they're boring.
Yeah.
They're so boring and flat.
And because George Lucas is not an actor's director, you watch them and you go, that was your best take?
That's the take you went with? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the problem is, like, everybody in that movie, almost every single actor in that movie acts like they're in the waiting room for a DMV appointment.
Yeah.
Because, again, all of those scenes, even all of those scenes with the exact same dialogue would work. To me, I think it all comes down to the scenes. It's the scenes. The scenes are boring.
Yeah.
And if you had a different director, same dialogue, same actors, I think you might see a huge difference in that movie. And I'm talking about, like, not even changing one line from the script.
Yeah.
Like, I even think in a lot of places, if that was, like, jazzed up a little bit, I even think Jar Jar would be, like, saved quite a bit as well.
I think so. And
because Jar Jar's no more stupid than C-3PO in the first movie.
He's not.
In New Hope.
You and I actually had this conversation a couple weeks ago talking about Ahmed Best, who plays Jar Jar.
That, great actor.
He's a guy who came in and made a really bold choice and took a really big swing.
Yeah.
He's a theater actor, so he's used to going huge. And no one told him to walk it back.
Nope. George did not.
You know, and I feel really bad for him, and I think it's amazing that he's become this mental health advocate.
Well, especially all the flack he got after, yeah.
Yeah,
It was incredibly brave of him to do that interview recently where he talked about how he almost committed suicide. That is insane. That is incredibly brave of him.
And I don't think that the fault of that character lies with him at all.
I don't either. I think it's George Lucas.
Absolutely. There is a version called the anti-cheese cut where they give him, I think that's the one that dude from that 70s show edited.
No. You're combining two things. So the anti-cheese edit, which, by the way, I looked on YouTube very recently, is no longer on YouTube. Disney took it down.
Oh, well, you'll have to find it somewhere else. I'm sure you can.
But it was basically, there's anti-cheese edits where they edit all the, basically a lot of Jar Jar out of the movies.
But when Jar Jar speaks, they dub him with an alien voice.
And they give him subtitles. So yeah.
Which I think is a cool choice.
So I've watched pieces of that. Uh-huh. So those are the only pieces of Phantom Menace I've seen since 2010. Because I'd heard about it. IO9 did an article about it. Yeah, and so when Jar Jar speaks, he's subtitled. And he sounds like this. He sounds like...
Yeah.
It sounds like that. And it actually makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable how much of a difference it makes. And they didn't even change any of his lines. But the anti-cheese edit, I think, knocked down... Because Phantom Menace is 2 hours and 12 minutes, which is a little long. I think Attack of the Clones is 2 hours 20, which is quite
long.
Too long. But I think the anti-cheese edit knocks it down to an hour and a half.
That's solid.
Which is pretty solid. But, yeah, I don't know. Ashley, any other successes? Or I would love to hear, do you have another positive? I mean, the pod race is pretty damn cool.
The pod race is cool. And you've touched on it a little bit, but, I mean, Darth Maul such a great success.
Love our adventure.
Ray Park crushes it.
You know who does his real voice? You know who does Darth Maul's voice, right?
The Tick.
Peter Serafinowicz, yep.
We shall have
our revenge,
I
master.
I think, and then Sam Witwer. And I think there's a reason why they keep undeadening him.
Because he looks so cool. His design is so cool.
But even
I painted my face like Darth Maul once.
I'm not surprised by that. Even beyond that, the mythology of that character is really cool. It was the first time we were in canon learning a lot more about the Sith as well.
The Sith. And again, another success of the Phantom Menace movie is the idea of a master and an apprentice.
Yeah.
Because again, it's interesting.
You're welcome, Mark Reilly.
Yeah, there you go.
I had nothing to do with it.
the interesting thing I learned from one of those, again, visual dictionaries.
Yeah.
Is that they give, they make it the impression, and you don't get this, you sort of get this from the dialogue, but I wish they would like they'd hit on this a little bit more. When Darth Maul finds them on Tatooine and leaps off that speeder bark and immediately starts fighting Qui-Gon.
So badass.
What's that?
That was so badass.
Yes. It's kind of understood from all the ancillary material that that is the first time a Jedi has fought anybody that wasn't a Jedi with a lightsaber in like hundreds of years.
And we sort of touched on that during our, did we do History of the Jedi or History of the Sith?
We did both.
We did both.
We did both.
God, I lost my mind doing both of those. We talked about how they would fight, and then break apart and forget each other existed, and then fight, and then break apart and forget each other existed.
And I wish they'd leaned into it, because there is a line where like Qui-Gon says, like, he goes, I think it was a Sith.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't know, because to the current generation of Jedis, they have no idea what the Sith look like, talk like, anything.
Yeah, they've never seen them.
You know, and I think that's an interesting concept that I wish the Phantom Menace had explored a little bit more.
The Visual Dictionary was the first place I ever read or heard about kyber crystals. And that was what you used to build your lightsaber, because they talked a lot about the Jedi Academy, because obviously there was a Jedi Academy at that time. And I remember in my journal drawing what my purple lightsaber would look like.
Kyber crystals not canonized until the Clone Wars animated series.
Really?
Yep.
Well, it's maybe it didn't say kyber crystals, but they had like a drawing of what
they,
your lights, it was always a crystal though.
It was always a crystal, but it was never you never saw the crystal.
Yeah.
They never said in none of the prequel movies do they say kyber crystal.
Interesting.
Anywhere. In fact, the only movie that says kyber crystal, Rogue One. Because they do this stupid retcon, which I do not like.
Uh-huh.
That the Death Star that beam is made of kyber crystals.
Oh yes, and I remember being mad about that.
Yeah,
but I was mad about most of that movie.
I hardcore reject that.
Yeah, headcanon completely rejected.
But no, the animated series is where they really dive into the kyber crystal thing, and that's where the first time because that is canon, and that's the first time that they canonized that.
Yeah, big part of the Ahsoka book as well.
It's a weird thing, because with Star Wars, especially the original trilogy, they do a lot of stuff where you've always heard about it. Like, you were like, oh, you'd always heard that, like, you know, George Lucas or some of these other people had dropped it, like the idea that Chewie owed Han a life debt.
Yeah.
Which we really didn't get to see till Solo, which I kind of disregard as well. But the other thing is like, until Episode 3, it was always understood that Anakin and Obi-Wan fought on a lava planet.
Yep.
And it wasn't canonized until, you know. It was also interesting.
Hey, you don't know that movie exists.
Oh, that's right.
It has yet to be canonized.
I have seen it. also, and this was something that I loved. I loved this. And this was one of the things about, speaking about a movie that I have never seen, Episode 2. In a lot of the extra expanded universe books that are no longer in canon, there was this great series that I read that Scholastic did, and they've reprinted them.
We have this in one of our recommended readings, I believe, for the History of the Jedi.
Yeah, Star Wars Jedi Apprentice.
Yep.
And it's a series about Obi-Wan becoming Qui-Gon's Padawan and how that happened. And in that book, they flat out say, and I love this, and this wasn't the only place that I had heard this, but there's also a loose thing that the reason why Obi-Wan took Luke to Tatooine is because Tatooine is Obi-Wan's home planet.
Yes.
And Obi-Wan is the older brother of Owen Lars.
Yeah, that's
and that his real name is Ben Lars. And
because you take a Jedi name.
Yes, because you take a Jedi name. And that's the reason why he goes back to Ben. And I always thought that was genius. And I love that, because I was like, oh, Of course, because, you know, when you think about, like, the two trilogies, you're like, oh, of course Darth Vader and the Emperor would have no idea what Obi-Wan... Because I guarantee you Obi-Wan never, like, never said... like, oh, yeah, my brother's Owen, da-da-da-da-da. Although yeah. It is a little coincidental that Obi-Wan and Anakin would be from Tatooine, but whatever.
You just have to roll with it.
There's plenty of stuff like that. Because, again, if Obi-Wan gives Luke to Owen, why didn't Darth just go look at his stepbrother? Also, I find it hard to believe that Darth, being so mad and angry, wouldn't just go there and murder them. Yeah. Just for the hell of it. Just because he's so angry. But anyways, that's one of my favorite Expanded Universe things. I don't know how we got to that. Sorry.
Kyber crystals.
Kyber crystals. All kinds of stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know. Duel of the Fates. The music of Phantom Menace is great. Duel of the Fates.
Sure.
Such a great song.
Yes. I don't know.
Qui-Gon's a great character in thought, not in execution.
I'll agree with that.
He's a great Jedi. And I wish they'd sat more into him. There's, again... In episode 3, they loosely touch on this idea that, like, the Jedi don't know how to turn into Force ghosts until Qui-Gon figures it out.
Mm-hmm.
But they have it happen off camera, and it's so dumb. And you're just like, man, you could have made this something. You could have made this a really great moment.
You could have made it matter, yeah.
You could have made it matter, and you didn't. Fun fact, the one time that Qui-Gon shows up in Star Wars, the Clone Wars animated series, actually voiced by Liam Neeson.
I didn't know that. That's
yeah,
cool.
They got him back. He came back to do it. Which I thought was really cool.
Maybe he's like, I'll always be Qui-Gon Jinn. Except now he's canceled, so.
Well, let's talk about Qui-Gon Jinn. So Qui-Gon Jinn is presented in this movie as, like, this ultimate space Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's very, like, very chill, very...
I mean, he looks like white guy Jesus, too.
And, yes, and there's a line in there where Obi-Wan says that Qui-Gon would be on the council, but he keeps turning it down.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like following their rules. And then Obi-Wan actually ends up on that council.
Yep.
Which is very interesting. Like, what do you think George was trying to say with Qui-Gon Jinn? Like, that he was this very there's a lot of theories between the prequel trilogy and the original trilogy that George Lucas is going for a mirroring. So, like, the idea that Return of the Jedi mirrors the Phantom Menace, and mm-hmm. in some ways they do, like, you know, an invasion by a creature technology, the Gungans and mm-hmm. the Ewoks. And if you're looking for the Qui-Gon comparison, the Qui-Gon comparison is Luke. Luke's a very untraditional Jedi.
All of the best Jedi are non-traditional Jedi.
Yeah, what about Obi-Wan? Can I be there?
But if you go by some of the extended canon, he failed at being a Jedi. He fell in love.
He did.
He did all these things that you're not really supposed to do.
Okay, so you don't view Obi-Wan as a traditional Jedi.
I don't.
Okay, cool.
So to me, like, well, if Luke is the end of the, you know,
circle.
The trickle, yeah. The water trickling down, well, he's trained by Obi-Wan Kenobi, who's untraditional, who's trained by, and Anakin is a very untraditional Jedi, so it makes sense to me that Qui-Gon is an untraditional Jedi. But also, again, we talked at the beginning of this about the stagnation of the Jedi at this point and how they're being marred by their traditions. So to me, if you're going for like a space Jesus or a space Moses metaphor, both of those leaders succeeded by being amongst their people, not by being kings, not by allowing themselves to be deified until after when the book demanded it. So... it makes sense to me that he would be like, no, I'll be a knight. I can be more effective in the field than sitting around talking about it.
It's interesting because I just thought about this as you were speaking.
Mm-hmm.
The only two people that Obi-Wan Kenobi has ever taught,
uh-huh.
Skywalkers.
Yeah.
That's the only two Jedis he's ever trained.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought both to knighthood.
Yeah.
He did Luke as he was a ghost. I mean, he had some help from Yoda.
Yeah.
But that's
but you have to look at Obi-Wan as Luke's primary mentor.
Oh, 100%. Especially since, again, the expanded materials that Luke became a Jedi Knight by reading Obi-Wan's journal.
I love that, yeah.
And he builds his light. That's why one of my favorite lightsabers in all of Star Wars is Luke's Return of the Jedi lightsaber.
Yeah.
Because it's built like Obi-Wan's.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's the exact, and I also, to me, I'm like, oh, that's really cool because that's Luke being like, fuck you, Dad. I'm not building the lightsaber anything like you anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in many ways, Obi-Wan, at least spiritually, is his father.
Oh, 100%. Hundo percento.
So
yeah. Well, we've given everybody 43 minutes on the Phantom Menace, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so you already, we always end Jason Ashley's. Oh, real quick, before we end, if this is something you guys would be interested in, I would love to talk through the prequel trilogies or kind of like do a talk on all of the Star Wars movies.
Mm-hmm.
If that's something you guys would be interested in, maybe that's something we put behind the Patreon wall or something like that. We'd probably redo Phantom Menace and like go more into depth, maybe follow the plot line in the movie. Maybe,
yeah, or perhaps we'd do a watch along with notes.
Or yeah, maybe break it down scene by scene.
Yeah.
Just kind of talking about stuff like that. So if that sounds like something, please let us know down in the comments, guys. And that sounds cool. Ashley, we always end these with, we figured it out a couple episodes ago.
Yep.
We are
what we're reading.
We're watching this with what you're reading. Ashley, what are you reading?
Yeah, so I'm finishing up the E.K. Johnson, The Queen's Shadow, which is the Padme new YA extended universe thingy-majiggy.
Yes.
I really like it. I was borrowed it from our friend Victoria. I actually don't know if it's Victoria Male or Victoria Malay, and now I feel bad.
Malay.
Lovely Victoria. From Your Biggest Fangirl podcast, who joined us for our Captain Marvel book club lesson, because she bought it and I told her she was going to lend it to me, and so she did. As she says, it does a lot of heavy lifting to explain some of the sillier things, but because it's all done on paper, I actually think it does a really interesting job examining Padme as she transitions from being queen to a senator, and I'm enjoying it very much. Jason, what are you reading?
I, verily humans, am reading The Mighty Thor by Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman.
Nice.
This is the series that deals with Jane Foster as Thor the Mighty.
Also played by Padme Amidala.
Played by Padme Amidala.
Padme Amidala Newberry.
Amidala Newberry, whatever. It's great. It's good stuff. Yeah.
Cool.
All right, that is it for this Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures.
Who are you?
I am Darth Jason. Remember, you're Darth Jason too.
That's right.
We're both Darth Jason. We're both called Darth Jason.
If you can make custom action figures and want to make us a Jason Solo, let us know.
What? That was a very random.
Well,
thing
I don't want
to
get Jane a solo if I don't have Jason to go with her.
Okay, got it.
Got to get both.
Got it. All right. This has been the podcast. As I will say, may the force be with you.
And also with you.
Always. Don't interrupt.